Here we are, like, oh, if I had an abduction story, like, I probably wouldn't tell anybody. We're going to tell the whole world about Elliot's abduction story.
Yeah, really, you dick. You're like, I wouldn't tell you because you'd make everybody hear about it on the podcast. And then your poor husband has an abduction story. And you're like, I'm going to tell everyone on the podcast.
I'm Paige.
And I'm Megan.
And this is Spooky Science Sisters.
Hey there!
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.
Hello, you're listening to Spooky Science Sisters, a podcast where we present to you a science-based and probably very giggly discussion on all things strange and unusual.
It's been a while since we've talked about extraterrestrials, so in this episode, we're finally going to discuss alien abductions. We're going to focus more so on the general psychological explanations for belief in alien abductions today, but we're planning on discussing specific cases in the future.
Before we get to our discussion, though, it's time to do something spooky! So, Paige, did anything spooky happen to you in the last 2 weeks? I know it's only been a week.
Right. Nothing spooky here yet, I don't believe. We did have some like mysterious like knocking happening below us, and we thought it was like on our like on their ceiling, on our the bottom, you know, the floor or whatever. And thought that maybe it was Elliot's wheel causing it. And then I was like, well, what if they're just trying to communicate with us? Like something's wrong. And then like the next day, somebody's car alarm, like a couple days later, somebody's car alarm just kept randomly going off. It went off like 8 different times. And I was convinced like something was happening and I was supposed to be calling the police. But like,
like someone in the downstairs apartment is like being held captive and they're doing whatever they can to
yeah, and I'm just the asshole people. Sitting upstairs getting pissed off because their car alarm keeps going off. But no, other than that, nope, nothing really. Anything spooky happen to you?
No, I have no conspiracy theories about my neighbors. But I wanted to step back to Dyatlov Pass for a couple of minutes because, as Paige can tell you, like literally the night that we stopped or that we recorded this episode and like for the entire week since it's been released now, I've just been like continuing to text Paige about like, maybe this happened or maybe we should have thought about this. I can't let it go. But I was super excited to have a listener reach out on Facebook with some more information about a possible theory. So I wanted to share his post and our response to it and get Paige's thoughts on it just because I thought he did a nice summary of something that we sort of only briefly touched on in the episode. So this is from Zachary Kreft on Facebook, and he says, the YouTube channel Bedtime Stories has done 3 episodes on the Dyatlov Pass incident. The first 2 covered the event itself and the theories surrounding it. The third was a follow-up that brought in new information and a new theory proposed by Richard Holmgren. A strikingly similar event happened in Sweden in 1978, wherein 8 people died and 1 survived. The group experienced a katabatic wind, an event in which dense cold air moves down a mountain. As it sinks, the air becomes denser and colder, picking up speed. They can create short-lived hurricane-force winds at extremely low temperatures. This happened again at the same location shortly after Holmgren and his group visited Dyatlov Pass, trying to recreate the original conditions. The group wouldn't have known it was happening until it hit the tent, which was staked lightly into the snow. They cut the tent open to escape, throwing snow and even a torch onto the tent so it wouldn't blow away. They headed towards the trees, the wind picking up debris, which struck them at high speed, causing some of their injuries. What happened afterward is fairly well understood, as you indicated in the podcast. This seems like a reasonable explanation to me. What do you think? Okay, so here is, I guess, I don't need to read my entire response, but some of my thoughts about that idea. And probably right now you can hear my dog chewing on his plastic bones. So sorry if it sounds like bones are getting crunched up in the background. That just adds to the spooky atmosphere of this podcast.
Thanks, Georgie.
Yeah. Okay. So I mentioned that we talked about the incident in Sweden at least briefly on the podcast. But after Zachary shared this, I looked a little bit more into it. And so first, I still struggle with the choice to head away from the tent, because if this is a weather event and if like a little bit of snow chucked on it was enough to keep it in place, then like even if the tent was partially collapsed, I still feel like it would be the safest place to be. Like if it wasn't an imminent danger of like completely blowing away, because like the body weight of 9 people is going to hold it down. And I also found out that in the case of the group in Sweden, they hadn't even gotten their tent put up yet. So it's like for them, sure, it's a sort of similar situation, but like they had no choice but to seek shelter elsewhere. Okay, but all that said, you're in a dangerous situation. Like, we also have to consider that maybe they just didn't make the most logical choices. So it's possible that, you know, they got out, or I think it's possible that they got out of the tent, like started to throw some snow on it, and then maybe like debris or something started to hit them. And so then they sort of panicked and they were like, okay, we just need to hit, you know, head for shelter, and they just head for the trees at that point. Like, that seems perfectly logical, and I guess sort of like makes the katabatic wind thing seem a little bit more feasible to me, because I hadn't really thought about like, oh yeah, there also might be like debris flying at them. So like if they had gotten out of the tent to try and like better stake it down or something, and then they're like, oh shit, we're getting hit by debris, and then they go head towards the wood, it's, and then it all sort of falls apart, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still stuck at the exact same spot that I've been stuck at this entire time, which is like, did they not have time to grab their boots?
Yeah. No, I know. And I think in a follow-up comment, because we went back and forth about this, Zachary pointed out the same thing. And if you like looked at the YouTube comments on that Bedtime Stories video, people were like, okay, but why didn't they have their boots?
Right. Yeah. Like, okay, I could buy that maybe they, once they were outside of the tent, that like maybe they just panicked. But yeah. I still get stuck like anywhere before that.
Right.
Like in why every they... one of these scenarios, I'm yeah. still like, okay, but what about the boots?
Yeah. Like, why did they leave the tent at all without putting their boots on first, even if right. it was partially collapsed? So yeah, so again, then I like, you know, again, I circle back to like, they must have thought an avalanche was going to hit it. So they leave the tent without their shoes and peace out. Like, and then that doesn't happen, but they're already in trouble at that point.
Right.
I don't know. I literally, we could talk another hour about this. But anyway, I thought it was
We appreciate the comment.
Yes, I very much appreciate the comment. I love talking about that story. So yeah. So more comments, everybody. Fact check us. Tell us what you think. Tell us your theories. I love it. More of that. Okay. So now it's alien abduction time. Yay. Which I could have told my thought I was getting abducted by alien story, but you guys have already heard that like 3 times. So,
but don't worry. We have a new close to home alien abduction story to tell you today. So
yes, which I won't spoil, but I read through it in the notes and I was like, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
I hate it. Okay. So like Paige mentioned in the intro, we're going to be doing, rather than getting super specific about individual alien abduction cases, which I am sure that we'll do in the future, for now we sort of wanted to do a more general look at, you know, what makes people think that they have been abducted by aliens, because spoiler alert, I think probably nobody's been abducted by aliens.
I'm shocked.
I can't believe that
I thought for sure you believed in alien abductions.
Yeah, and I just want to put this out there. I will mention it again later in the episode, but I want to put it out there that it does not mean that I think that all of these people are lying about being abducted by aliens, and we'll talk about why that is later. So, little tidbit for you. Okay. I'm in a really weird mood. Okay. So alien abduction stories, sort of like, I don't know, what we're all familiar with today. Like, I feel like there's just some sort of like tropes and common things that happen with all of them. And now Georgie is attacking me. So again, thank you so much for this. But they didn't really receive widespread attention until the 1960s. And you maybe see like a couple things that happened before that and got some news attention, like in the 40s and 50s. But a lot of people think that sort of our modern idea of like what happens in an alien abduction started with the abduction story that's told by a couple named Betty and Barney Hill. So this seems to basically spark or sort of period of interest in this, and also spark an increase in people claiming that they had been abducted. Okay, so what happened to Betty and Barney Hill? They are driving home from a vacation in Canada, and it is 1961, and they are driving, I think, you know, sort of on basically back roads, or at least they're driving through the White Mountains in New Hampshire, so it's fairly remote. And Betty says that she sees a light, and I think she calls it a star, but it appears to be following them in the sky or following the car. And this turns into a chase, and they feel like this thing is chasing them. They're very scared. They eventually say that they stop the car. Barney pulls out some binoculars, and they watch as this flying vehicle, whatever it is, which I guess at this point you can call it a UFO, descends and lands, and he sees through some sort of window in it that there are like these figures in black uniforms inside. Then both of them, Betty and Barney, wake up. They find themselves, I guess, quote unquote, wake up, because I don't think they really thought they were asleep, but they sort of like are magically further down the road, and they appear to have been like missing a couple of hours of time. Like, it took them a couple of hours longer to get home than it should have. And they're not sure why that is.
But these are hours that they can't account for, correct? Like,
yes,
they don't remember.
Yeah,
them.
It's like, okay. Yeah, this whole missing time thing. Okay. So once they get home, over the next couple of years, I think they talk about their experience in church some, but Betty starts having these really terrible nightmares about that night. So they end up seeking help from a psychiatrist, and this is a man named Dr. Benjamin Simon, who examines them both under hypnosis. And importantly, I want to point out that this is 2 years after after this event, after this night in 1961. So while Betty and Barney are hypnotized, both of them say that they remember being taken into a flying saucer, and they're examined or experimented on, or like some sort of samples are taken from them by these like strange alien beings. So one thing that's notable about this story is that Betty and Barney were an interracial couple at a time when they probably wouldn't have wanted to draw a lot of attention to themselves. So it's definitely interesting that they like chose to basically go wide with this story and tell people. Yeah, so they might not want the attention that this type of story might generate. And their psychiatrist, Dr. Simon, thinks that some of the stress of that and like of the fact that, you know, they may have like had trouble finding somewhere to stay that night because they were a mixed race couple might have contributed to this story. Despite all this, despite telling this like very fantastic alien abduction story, Dr. Simon, who's the psychiatrist who performed these hypnosis sessions, decides that he thinks their story was just a manifestation of Betty's nightmares. And this explains why Barney's account was less detailed. And it's also telling that neither of them, you know, again, neither of them remembered this abduction at all until they underwent this hypnosis procedure. And so it's basically where this whole trope or concept that abductees experience missing time, it's where this came from. And so this is the big story that kicks off everybody being super into alien abductions. And of course, like believers think that aliens are somehow like manipulating abductees' brains into, you know, like they're erasing their memories so they don't remember right. What the aliens have done to them. And so it's like only this hypnosis that can like dive in and retrieve those memories. But we're going to talk about how, you know, probably that's not the case. So without getting into it too much, I mean, my perspective is like they're driving late at night because at the time they may have had trouble finding a place to stay as a mixed race couple. And again, more bone crunching. They're stressed out because of that. They're tired. It's nighttime. My thoughts are like, you know, they say that they're missing a couple hours of time. They say that they pulled over on the side of the road. Like, maybe they just like pulled over on the side of the road to just nap for a couple of hours. And then later on, you know, they undergo this hypnosis. They've had this stressful experience, like, and memories just basically get jumbled together into like this new, very fantastic story, you know?
Yeah, I think that makes perfectly good sense. I mean, good sense, especially if Betty's already having these terrible nightmares. Like if she fell asleep and happened to have some kind of weird dream and then woke up and maybe talked about it even.
Right.
And it sounds like, you know, the light alone, even if that light did happen where they saw a light and they started to kind of, I guess, run from it, like that probably was a little bit scary. So I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. That all makes sense to
and
me.
Yeah. And this is like, I mean, their case is definitely, it shows up a lot in, I guess, sort of the UFO community. And I think most people would argue that, you know, they're pretty credible witnesses to like whatever happened to them. But I still think, yeah, something happened to like distort their memories of
right.
that night.
And I frequently fall asleep for what I think is like 2 minutes. And it's really been like 3 hours.
Right.
So I buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're super interested in their story and want to take, you know, a deep dive into what happened to them and actually hear some of the tapes from their hypnosis sessions, the podcast Strange Arrivals, which came out last year and is like 11 episodes all focused on this, is really great. And the host is a really great narrator. So that's a really interesting perspective on everything that happened to them and what people think about it. And also just like a good look into sort of how the UFO community like developed at the time. So that's like the original alien abduction story. I think it's also important to note that the timing of abduction stories like this becoming more popular also makes sense given that leading up to and like at this time, space travel was becoming a reality. Like Sputnik had been launched and we're headed towards the moon and stuff. And science fiction literature got really popular. There were some like pretty popular TV programs. So it's like this is something that people had on the brain. Interest in alien abductions sort of peaked in the 1980s and 1990s. Part of this is related to work that's done by three men named Bud Hopkins, John Mack, and David Jacobs. So these are high-profile ufologists, which I still think is like a hilarious word. it's UFOologists, but they've like made it into it. Ufologists.
Ufologists.
Every time I hear it, I'm like, oh, stupid. Which I should be careful because the UFO community is like, oh, they're a little intense. So, and by a little, I mean like they could be a lot.
Like intense. Very intense.
Yes. So don't come for me. But
she
they,
said it.
Shut up. They are three guys, three ufologists who are said to have sort of pioneered the field of alien abduction research, as it were. And particularly, they're super involved in this idea of using hypnosis to help people recover memories of being abducted. So it's like, it sort of sounds like they went around and like people would tell them like, oh, I had this weird experience and like I lost a couple hours of time. And they were like, you were probably abducted. And then like they hypnotize them and, you know, they come up with this big story about it. And I guess like I hear the hypnosis thing and I mean, I think there's like some evidence that it can be, you know, like a beneficial therapeutic technique, but I think it's pretty controversial, like in terms of psychiatry. So I'm like immediately sort of skeptical when like major evidence for these types of things happen, like hinge on recovered memories during hypnosis sessions.
Well, and that seems to be like the only evidence.
Right. Yes. Yeah. okay. So yeah, so these three guys, their work gets popular in the 80s and 90s. And then there's also, of course, a major pop culture at that time, like the release of the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And then in the 90s, The X-Files, which, you know, I love. And Paige's husband loves, but Paige.
I just talked today about needing to watch it. I said, I feel like I'm a fraud. And I need to watch the damn X-Files, so I think I'm finally going to do it so you can stop picking on me.
Yeah, I like get it because like I know I've talked about this before, but like I got super into it because my parents were watching it like at the time that it was popular, like at the time that it was released. So I have like this nostalgia about it because it was super fun to get to stay up late and watch something creepy when I was little. But like now, like it's definitely like it's cheesy in a 90s way. And like I know like people are super crazy about that show Twin Peaks from the 90s, which arguably is like sort of cheesy in a very similar way to the X-Files. Like, but because I don't have the like nostalgia about it, like I've tried like three times to watch that show and I just can't get past like the first couple episodes.
Yeah, I've watched a single episode so far of X-Files and I don't know. I don't know that I hated it, but I don't know that I was like, man, I really want to watch more of this show. So we'll see, but I am going to try.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think my friend Allie watched like through all of it for the first time not too long ago. So you know, it can still be enjoyable in today's world. And it's like worth noting that like Vince Gilligan, who was the guy who was the creator, writer, director, I don't know for what he was for Breaking Bad, was one of the main writers for the X-Files.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So there are some like some of the episodes that people say like, oh, these are like the best episodes of the X-Files are like ones that he did. So, yeah.
All right. Maybe I'll watch it. I love him. So,
yeah. So that sweetens the pot. Okay. But we are not an X-Files podcast. So we can move on now. So Paige, do you want to talk about the sort of numbers associated with or current numbers associated with alien abductions?
Yeah. And surprisingly, I wasn't able to find as much information on this as like I would have thought There's a like a whole list of and I thought I'd written it down, but I apparently did not. But it's a website that we had talked about in a previous episode, and they have a list of like every UFO sighting and alien abduction and everything on that site, but I couldn't find like just the numbers for alien abductions. Mm-hmm. But what I did find is that several sources claim that alien abduction reports have been down, which you said it peaked in the 90s, and it looks like it's kind of been trending downwards. And that was like years 2014 to 2018 is kind of where I read some of that. So in 2014, there was a survey done for a British talk show where they said one in 25 of their respondents believed that they had been abducted, which is like far higher than I would have expected.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, I don't really know like who they were asking, so like it didn't really go into detail as to like what demographic or, you know, what age, anything like that. So who knows? But sure. 1 in 25 respondents feels high to me.
Yeah. And of course, this is like a talk show survey. So right. Like, who knows how scientifically valid it is, because like the people responding to the survey probably already had some interest in the topic. But right. Like if that like statistically, you know, if that could be applied to everybody, like you definitely know more than 25 people, so it's like that means you know several people who like think that they've been abducted by aliens.
I mean, I know at least one.
Like, yeah, but he doesn't really. Okay, we're gonna talk about it later, it's fine. Okay.
So then according to a National Geographic survey in 1996, 71% of people thought that the government was hiding like some sort of alien activity. Now that's not just abductions, that's, you know, UFO. That's like every alien thing ever. Like they right. The 71% of people in 96 believed that the government was involved and was hiding some sort of alien activity. Okay. In 2012, that number actually went up to 79%. So even though like alien abduction, you know, people believing they had been abducted had gone down, people believing that the government was hiding something went up. And I just thought this quote that I found was really funny. So they said, so based off that number, 79% in 2012, in other words, more people believe that the U.S. government is covering up evidence of alien life than believe that Jesus is the Son of God.
Wow.
Yeah. Which, yeah, they said that a 2013 survey found that 68% of respondents believed in Christianity's central tenet. So more people believe that the government is hiding aliens from us.
Yeah. And I had heard like a whole range of numbers from like, you know, people said like tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of people. But then a number that I saw show up repeatedly was that 3.7 million Americans, so like just Americans alone, thought that they had been abducted.
Yeah. So, and I thought I put that
in here. That's like a percent.
Yeah. And I had read that. That was like an article that I had read from 96, I want to say, that had said that almost 4 million Americans had reported some sort of alien abduction.
But I saw that show up like consistently in later articles as well.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I think that's like, I don't know, a somewhat legit number because they were from what seemed like credible sources. So
yeah, that's anyway, a lot of people.
That's a lot of
people. Once again, far higher than I would have thought.
Well, yeah. And so like with respect to the government thing, I think it's sort of funny too, though, because so like you hear this thing like, oh, the government knows like all about it. And like it's a whole thing now, like especially after the Navy videos and like them saying they have this like ATIP program or whatever that's like looking into UFOs and stuff like that. And whatever, like, which I don't think proves anything, but they think like the government knows and they're just like waiting, like there's this whole group like just waiting for disclosure and stuff. And again, I should not be too snarky because I don't want to get attacked, but like the funny thing about that is like some people are like, oh, like the government knows everything, and like on the flip side you hear about the government like planting stories about UFOs and aliens and stuff like that, like to distract people from like actual secret operations that they have going on. So it's like, well, which one is it? Like, you can't have it both ways. So
the government can do whatever it wants, Megan.
Yeah. So I imagine that there's like a secret, you know, fight between the different factions of UFO believers or alien believers. And then I wasn't sure if you were going to mention this, but I had read that there was a 2017 survey that was commissioned by 20th Century Fox, which is like weird timing. Did they bring back the X-Files in 2017? That might be what the timing was about. Anyway.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. But they indicated that 39% of Americans believe that aliens visited the Earth, and 18% of people believe that, like, they're running around abducting people.
Okay, so that leads me to believe that, like, less than 18% of people believe they've been abducted.
Well, yeah, I said, like, so 4% or 4 million would be, like, a percent.
Well, sure. I guess 4 million, though, is how many have come forward and said that they've been abducted.
Oh, sure. Yeah, like, that's how many actual reported cases, yeah.
Right. So if 18% believe that they abduct people, that means that, like...
Yeah.
I think you could at least cut that in half, right?
Yeah.
Well, no more than 9%.
And it is fair to say that the number that have been reported, like, whether it's, like, you know, whether it's tens of thousands or 4 million or whatever, is probably underreported relative to the people that actually think that, because, like, mm-hmm. yeah, like, it can fuck up your life, it sounds like.
Right.
Like, people get pretty big criticism and, like, yeah, have to undergo all sorts of shit from people for admitting these types of things. So right. there's a ton of, so, like, as much as I, you know, am involved in, like, giving some snark to, like, some of the UFO community and stuff, because some of it is, like, just ridiculous, like, there is some crazy, like, stigma associated with some of it. So, yeah, you know. So sometimes I think, like, maybe someone's going to find out that I'm, like, doing this podcast and they're going to be like, no, your science career is over. And then lastly, I think it's really funny that you can get an insurance policy against alien abduction.
Well, yeah. And so one of the ones that I read, which, like, was, I think it's, like, mostly just a joke, but specifically stated that you had to have a signature from a confirmed onboard alien to be able to, like, qualify your claim or whatever.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, so there's, like, no way you could claim this. Or, like, right. Yeah, that's pretty hilarious. But, yeah, it's, like, some, like niche insurance policies will be, like, they offer protection against alien abduction, which I guess would be, like, they'd cover your lost wages, like, while you were abducted. I don't fucking know.
Yeah, I don't know.
What would be covered under that policy?
Well, potentially any, like, therapy that you have to go through.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Like, therapy or medical expenses or whatever, for whatever happens.
Right.
But either way, it's funny that you,
because there's no way if I get abducted by aliens that I'm coming back and just being like, yeah, cool, and living a normal life. Like, I'm getting some medical help.
Yeah, that's a good question, though. Like, let's say that you had one. Well, I guess now you might not, because you, like, have looked into, you know, the science behind, like, why people might say they had been abducted when they hadn't. But, like, let's say you hadn't. You weren't familiar with any of that or, like, any of the stuff that we're doing. And, like, you had an abduction experience, like, would you tell people about it, or would you just, do you think you'd tell people about it, or do you think you'd just, like, keep it inside?
I would probably tell some people. Like, I would tell people who are close to me, I think.
Yeah.
Like you and Sarah and Elliot, and that's maybe it.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would, you know, go, I don't know. Depends.
Well, you're not going to be, like, selling it to news stories or anything.
Right. Right. Like, maybe I end up going to a doctor and saying, like, hey, I had this, like, terrible, horrifying experience happen. And I'm not saying it's an abduction, but, like, potentially it was. Will you check me out and make sure I'm okay? What about you? Would you tell anybody?
Yeah, probably not. I'd probably be in the same situation where I'd just, like, tell people I was close to, I guess. I don't know. I have no idea.
Who knows? I guess it would depend on like how sure I was that I was actually abducted.
Yeah. Although, you know what's funny is like, yeah, there is like a weird stigma, because that I think I would be like way more hesitant to tell people about, like beyond like Steven and like you or super close people that I'm super close to. But like if I thought that I saw a ghost, I'd tell fucking everyone. Like right. That would be the story that I tell to everybody that I meet ever.
Right.
Like, yeah, I saw a ghost once.
Yeah, that's weird.
Right? Or like, so, yeah. Or like thing. If I thought that I saw a Bigfoot, I'd be like, I saw a Bigfoot.
Oh, for sure. I did that the other day to you.
Yeah. Right. So like, that's really funny because with the UFO thing, I'd be like, people are definitely going to think I'm crazy. Like, for sure not telling anybody about this.
Possibly, I maybe wouldn't tell you because then you'd want to talk about it on here.
Well, I was supposing a world where the podcast didn't.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Okay. Yeah, I'm telling you.
Because I thought, like, if it happened to you now, you would just go to a doctor and be like, we need to, like, have a chat about my anxiety or something.
Right.
Yeah, like, whatever triggered this. Okay.
All right. So, we want to talk about some of the possible explanations. And there are, like, once again, a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we touch on like maybe two or three big ones, because like most of them are probably going to fall into one or two of these anyway. But there are more than just like three possible explanations. The explanation that I'm going to talk about is called accidental awareness, or memories from accidental awareness. And accidental awareness occurs when a patient wakes up from general anesthesia and is able to see kind of what's going on during surgery, which is literally one of my biggest nightmares and is the reason I have yet to get my wisdom teeth out, because I'm afraid it's going to happen to me.
God.
This is my life.
Get your fucking wisdom teeth out.
And so when Betty and Barney had, you know, their alien abduction experience, mm-hmm. that was in 61, right?
Yes.
Okay. So
now George is chasing around one of Alice's toy balls that has a rattle inside of it.
Of course he is. He has thoughts about this.
Here's my new theory. I think he like hears your voice probably. Like even though I have headphones on, I bet he can still hear your voice. And I think he probably gets super worked up. Because like he'll just be sleeping and doing nothing. And then like we start podcasting and he's like, I want to be all over you. I want to climb all over you. I want to get in your face.
So he misses his Aunt Paige.
I wonder if he's like, I hear this other person. Maybe she'll pet you too. Anyway.
Okay, so the Barney Betty alien abduction experience is what I guess I'm calling it, occurred in 61. And this idea of accidental awareness didn't really start attracting any attention until the late 90s, when Carol, and I think it's Wearer, published her own experience of waking up from general anesthesia. And so it really wouldn't have been something that they could have like pointed a finger to when they first came out with their story. In 2008, a psychoanalyst by the name of David V. Forrest from Columbia University published an article titled Alien Abduction, a Medical Hypothesis, which suggests that accidental awareness could be the explanation behind many alien abduction stories. Several years after that article came out, the Royal College of Anesthetists published a report including the largest collection of data ever seen on accidental awareness. And they found that half of the patients who had accidental awareness tend to experience pain, 2/3 experience helplessness and panic, and over 40% of those people had moderate to severe psychological harm, including PTSD. And for a lot of those people, they said that it was like lifelong, like it was a permanent issue for them. Which
I shouldn't laugh. I'm only laughing because I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah, here's yet another situation where the potentially true explanation is far more terrible. Like, not that alien abductions aren't scary, but like, this is terrifying to me.
Yeah.
But maybe that's maybe I'm just insane for being worried about it.
Yeah. I mean, fucking obviously, though, if you're like in the middle of surgery, but you're like conscious for it. No, that's awful.
Right, right. So these articles are basically suggesting that some alien abductees are just recovering memories from that accidental awareness. So it's just them having flashbacks or having these like really vibrant memories of when they woke up during surgery. One of the patients that they talked to in the Scientific American article about this reports their flashback as, "It struck again days later as horrifying images and terror that rose from the depths of my being. I was once again in the grips of horror, again not comprehending, again trapped, again struggling to survive, yet wishing for death." And they say that, like, when you talk to somebody who thinks they've been abducted by aliens, their account, while it's similar in that, like, people are, you know, not able to really understand the fear they're having, and they're having these like horrifying images going on and all that, it's like an abduction seems like almost restful in comparison to what this person is describing.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of them, though, like, people talk about experiencing pain, or like I think even Betty like talks about experiencing some sort of pain during their abduction, quote unquote.
Gotcha. Well, so then they actually talk about Benny and Barney's experience in these articles.
Betty.
Did Benny I say Benny? Barney. I even wrote Benny. Yeah, it's Benny and Barney now. I've renamed her.
It's easy to mix that up, though. Benny and Barty. Betty and Barney.
So going back to the David V. Forrest article, he likens Betty's account of bug-eyed greenish humanoids standing around her on a table, which is something that she says happens during mm-hmm. her abduction, to doctors and nurses and scrubs while being on table being prepped for surgery.
Like, surgery scrubs are green.
Right. And then during a hypnotic trance, Barney says that he does not want to be operated on. So they're saying that they believe it's possible that Barney could just have been having a flashback to his tonsillectomy, and that maybe he had forgotten about even waking up in the middle of the surgery and kind of repressed that memory until he had some sort of flashback that night in 61, mm-hmm. Which could have potentially been triggered by seeing some sort of, you know, bright light or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it just jarred him into it. I do not necessarily buy it in this case, only mm-hmm. because it, to me, it like explains maybe one of them having, you know, this experience, mm-hmm. but it doesn't really explain both of them having it at the mm-hmm. same time to me. But overall, I think it's like a perfectly reasonable and logical explanation for other alien abduction stories.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think it's, a like you said, logical for other alien abduction stories. But the stuff that I read more so suggests that Benny was influenced by Betty's story. And like, his account is less detailed from her.
Right.
So like, I would guess that it's more like, which is what we'll talk about, like false memories. But like false memories from like her hypnosis sessions related to like some sort of stress, like that she creates this narrative from her nightmares, and then like he latches on to that, and then they come up in his hypnosis sessions. So
yeah and I like I said, I don't necessarily buy it with their story,
right.
But I do think, I thought it was super interesting. I was very excited about these articles.
Yeah, I know you were excited, but also get your wisdom teeth out.
It's
gonna be worse if they get fucked up.
I know, but it's like, it's a whole thing now.
You creating a whole thing? I don't believe it.
Okay, let's talk about something else, Megan.
Shut up, Paige.
Shut up. It's time for sleep paralysis.
this is a weird day. Okay. So another explanation for alien abductions. And I think like people pretty much agree, at least in like the skeptic community, that this is a possible explanation for like most alien abduction stories, is that the people experienced sleep paralysis. So in the 1980s and 1990s, when stories of alien abduction really start to get popular, I had read or heard that the narrative of the abduction story started to change. So like rather than these earlier stories like Betty and Barney Hill, where they're, you know, driving around on the back roads or like they're in some deserted spot in their car, most abductees were saying that they were in bed and they're woken up in the middle of the night. There are like aliens in their room and they're taken up into some craft and experimented on. And like pretty much this is consistent. Like they're paralyzed with fear. And like it's like this is consistent with sleep paralysis. Like,
right.
Yeah. 100%. And this phenomenon of sleep paralysis has been known about for a long time. And in the Strange Arrivals podcast, he talks about how the term nightmare, in a dictionary that was written in 1755, the way that it's described at that point before it sort of like morphs into our current concept of what a nightmare is more consistent with a description of sleep paralysis.
Hmm.
And I guess before the 1960s, and like before the popularization of these abduction stories, a lot of sleep paralysis stories would feature like an old hag, so like an old witch woman or whatever in your room. And this is actually where the term haggard comes from. So you like feel haggard when you wake up in the morning because like the old hag was bugging you all night.
Huh.
Which I thought was so awesome. But like, and but you know, and that's not, it's not like everyone who experiences sleep paralysis at this point thinks that they've been abducted. It's just that, you know, these abduction stories have sort of shifted towards that, because like obviously people experience sleep paralysis and they think like there's a demon in their room or whatever. So like I think, right, it, you know, somewhat depends person to person. But it's definitely telling that the narrative behind these types of experiences and like things happening to people at night have changed with the times, because it like definitely suggests that it's a trick of the mind that's like influenced by popular culture rather than an actual physical experience that people, right, are having, like rather than the fact that they're actually getting abducted.
Well, here's another thing, which is just like, I don't know, maybe it's obvious and silly to even comment on, but like, mm-hmm, how convenient for the aliens that like everybody they abduct is sleeping.
Well, you know? I mean, like, you know, I would presumably be tougher to abduct a person who's awake.
Well, sure, but like, I guess my point is that like, you would think you would hear more stories about or like abductions gone wrong, or like people seeing aliens like showing up at their house or something. I don't know. Like,
yeah, but I think there probably are ones like that though. Like people saw the aliens in their room, but like they didn't actually get abducted because like they woke up before the sleep paralysis event went further, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's probably true. Like, maybe it exists. I just, like, you never hear those stories. You never hear of the, like, oh, well, I was awake and the aliens showed up and then realized I was awake, so they left.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, and it's honestly, like, it's honestly harder. So it's pretty easy to explain, you know, it was the middle of the night and I woke up and was, like, so scared and blah, blah, blah. Easier to explain those with sleep paralysis. Like the ones that are harder are the ones like Betty and Barney Hill, because,
right,
regardless of like what they ended up remembering under hypnosis and stuff, like the actual events of those that night like must have been pretty stressful to like make their brain, you know, create some sort of story for it, you,
right,
know,
right?
So I don't know, brains are weird. Okay, so obviously as this abduction narrative is becoming more popular of people being taken at night, and just like the fact that sleep paralysis is terrifying, I'm sure, or they think, you know, a lot of people potentially sought help from people of the likes of Bud Hopkins, John Mack, David Jacobs, who we mentioned earlier, who like pretty much saw these sorts of things as like evidence that this person had actually been abducted. And then, you know, they basically through the power of suggestion during interviews or hypnosis sessions, this person becomes convinced that they had been actually abducted by aliens. So again, the reasons that like hypnosis is controversial. So there's this man named Michael Shermer who has this great story sort of related to sleep paralysis and having this false memory. And I'll talk about false memories after this. But he is an author, professor, and a founding publisher of Skeptic magazine. But this is a quote from his website. So he says, "In the wee hours of the morning on August 8th, 1983, while I was traveling along a lonely rural highway approaching Hagler, Nebraska, no flipping idea, a large craft, a large craft with bright lights overtook me and forced me to the side of the road. Alien beings exited the craft and abducted me for 90 minutes, after which time I found myself back on the road with no memory of what transpired inside the ship. I can prove that this happened because I recounted it to a film crew shortly afterward." So, what actually happened to Michael Shermer is that he was in the middle of like a 3,000 mile endurance bicycle race, and he was like 1,200 something miles in and had been awake for like 83 hours. So he's essentially hallucinating at this point. So this isn't so much sleep paralysis. This is my segue into this idea of false memories and basically what I think happened in the case of Betty and Barney Hill. But his support motorhome pulled him over because he's like weaving around the road on his bike and forced him to take a sleep break. And his brain pulls out some memory from like this 1960s show called The Invaders and mixes it in with real life in this like semi-dream state. And yeah, it turns into this alien abduction story that like never actually happened. Like it was just people picking him up on his bike. So yeah, so like that is basically what I think happened in the case of Betty and Barney Hill in this original abduction story, is like they're very tired. They maybe took a nap on the side of the road. You know, Betty starts having these nightmares afterwards, and then it turns into this whole thing once they start the hypnosis stuff. Okay, so there have been studies that have been done on the differences between how skeptics and believers in, you know, UFOs, aliens, whatever, recall events. Or like even, you know, more broadly, there have been studies done on like how believers in the paranormal versus people who are more skeptical recall events.
I think these studies are so interesting.
I know. I was like, what the flip was I doing when I picked my field of study? it's like recently finding out that like spooky archaeology is like a thing. Like people publish archaeological papers about zombies and vampires. And I was like, what the fuck was I doing? I quit. No. Time for another PhD. Okay. So these studies have shown, so important fact number one, or I not fact, I shouldn't call it fact, I should use proper language, but whatever, have suggested.
We're scientific here.
God damn it. that there's no convincing evidence, and this is a quote, for higher rates of serious psychopathology amongst abductees compared to the general population. So basically, like, it's not just that they, you know, have something psychologically wrong with them or some psychological disorder. Abductees do, however, often ascribe to New Age beliefs. And this is things like astral projection and like fortune telling. And essentially, this just makes them more prone to believe that something like a sleep paralysis incident, for example, is evidence that they were abducted. I also heard it phrased that people who report abduction experiences often report other paranormal experiences that they've had and have, quote, fantasy-prone personalities.
Hmm.
So again, these people are just like have a propensity for this stuff. Others have found that, and another quote because I like how people phrase things, that abductees were much more prone to exhibit false recall and false recognition in the lab than were control subjects. So this is in relation to a particular study that was done in 2002 by researchers at Harvard. And the study, the paper that was published is called Memory Distortion in People Reporting Abduction by Aliens. So in this study, participants were read a series of words and then asked to recall them later after performing a few simple math problems. So basically just like, you know, move their brain onto something else and then come back to this idea. So the list of words that they were given, all the words on a list were related in some way. And the researchers had a particular, what they call a critical lure word. Lure, that's a weird word. Associated.
I can never say it correctly. I don't even know I know the right way to say it.
I think lure. I said it more like lore and then I, yeah.
And then lure.
I know. My Midwest accent is fucking it up. But anyway, so they had a particular critical lure word associated with each of these lists. So for example, for one of these lists, is sour, candy, sugar, bitter, good, taste, tooth, nice, honey, soda, chocolate, heart, cake, tart, pie. And I think when they read these to them, they were like all like one word every 3 seconds. Like it was all very official and scientific. But the lure word in this case was sweet. So participants in this study who claimed to have these recovered memories of alien abductions that they'd gotten from like hypnosis sessions were more likely to also write down the word sweet. They were more likely to write down the critical lure word as well as the words that they remembered in the list. So basically they created a false memory in this study.
The study is so cool.
It is really cool. So like they thought that they had heard the word sweet in the list, but it's like just their brain putting it together. So right. Like explains, you know, that they're more suggestible, or like if you wanted to be a little more cynical, that they're like more gullible about these types of things. It's so crazy. So it like freaks me out about my brain though, because it's like, what is even real? But there is like a false memory syndrome, and apparently false memories are like actually pretty common, so that's freaky. And that people who are dealing with stress, like, it, you know, wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility that they create these false memories of alien abduction, particularly if the person who's, you know, evaluating them uses any kind of like inappropriate hypnotic technique. Importantly, studies have shown that recovered memories, even if they were false, are just as terrifying for people as if they were real. So these people, when they have like recordings of their hypnosis sessions played back to them, they react like people with PTSD react. Like they're real to them. They're very right. Terrifying. So that's why I mentioned at the beginning of the episode that these people aren't lying. Like these are, to them, these are real memories. Like they may have been created by their brain. They're not true, but like they believe that they're real. So I think that's key, because you hear a lot in these like, you know, what people consider credible alien encounters, that, you know, the person never changes their story, that they like pass multiple lie detector tests. And it's like, well, they're not lying. Like if it's a real memory to them.
The brain and memories are so interesting, cool, weird. Mm-hmm. It's something like it's like four, I think it's like 40% or 50% of people have like false memories as their first memory. So like their first memory isn't even like a real thing that happened. Or that like, you know, people like rearrange facts, or you have, you know, most of your memories from childhood like maybe rooted in truth, but ultimately you've changed enough about it where it's like not even really what happened anymore. It's like like you said, like what even is real? Like, I don't even know.
Right. Well, yeah, like I struggle with like trying to figure out what is like my first real memory, because I feel like I sometimes I'm like, do I even have a first real memory? Because like I can think of things, but it's like, am I just remembering like seeing pictures of it and then like being told what was happening in that picture? So it's really like, that's a good exercise for people to do, like try to think like what's your earliest memory, because I bet like you said, in a lot of cases it's not actually your memory, it's like you being told about what happened later on. That's so weird.
That's your mind fuck for the day.
Yay, nothing is real. Your brain creates memories for you. But yeah, it's also weird too though, because people said that like false memories can also be like they have led to people like confessing to like crimes that they didn't commit, because of some like weird hypnosis bullshit that happened. So it's not great.
It's like, it's terrifying. Yeah. Once again, here we are, another situation where that's scarier than.
Yeah. Although, I don't know, getting abducted by aliens would also be pretty terrifying.
I mean, it maybe would, but like, if all the alien abduction stories are true, it leads me to believe that like, I'm probably not going to die if I'm abducted.
Yeah.
Like, still scary for sure, but they're not going to kill me.
Yeah, but having a false memory isn't going to kill you either.
You don't know. It could.
You don't know.
Okay. Also scary. Maybe not scarier than, but still scary.
Okay. Let's do personal abduction stories. I'm so excited that we finally get to tell this, although I'm sure like Elliot's like, this is awful.
Yeah, he was like, I was like, I don't have to tell him it's you. I could just tell him it's a friend. Oh, no, it's fine. He didn't tell me I had to tell him it was someone else. Great. Here we are like, oh, if I had an abduction story, like I probably wouldn't tell anybody. We're going to tell the whole world about Elliot's abductions.
Yeah, really, you dick. You're like, I wouldn't tell you because you'd make everybody hear about it on the podcast. And then your poor husband has an abduction story. And you're like, I'm going to tell everyone on the podcast.
No, hold on. So let me preface this conversation with, he doesn't, like, logically he doesn't think that he was abducted by aliens.
Yes.
Like, he, it's a spooky story, and he's like, you know, it to a lot of people it's like an abduction story, but he doesn't actually think he was abducted.
Yes.
Okay. Good. So
I'm glad we clarified that.
Yeah, just so we're clear here. He's not convinced he was abducted by anything, or by aliens anyway. So yeah, this
was,
is,
he abducted by something else?
Well, here's the thing, we'll get there, but okay. Once again, this time I actually do mean that, like, I think the possible explanation could be scarier. So he was living with his mom still. So he was high school age. And just to give you kind of like a quick layout of the room he was in, because I think it'll help. It was like his room, and three of the walls were exterior walls. Maybe only two of them were. Two were exterior walls. So he had three windows. And so his, like, the bed was kind of up in a corner, and like where his head was, like there was a window kind of behind his head and a window to the left of his head. And then across the room, so the other side of the room, was the door leading into the bedroom. So he's sleeping. Like I said earlier, isn't that convenient for those aliens? And he said that he woke up from sleeping and he was abnormally cold, and he said that he noticed like what looked like floodlights coming through the windows, but like not just one window. It was like coming through all three windows.
Mm.
And he said that it was like paralyzing fear. He said but he was like frozen. He couldn't move. And he said that he felt like he was laying there for hours. No, it doesn't sound like he actually checked the time. So, you know, it could have been a couple minutes and just felt like forever. Mm-hmm. But he said like he felt like he was laying there forever. Mm-hmm. After, like I said, he was cold. He said that he did notice like once he was kind of, I guess, like came to or like was able to move, that all the sheets and blankets were off of his bed and they were on the other side of the room. So they were over by like where the door was. Mm-hmm. And all of the screens on the windows had been removed. And this is like, he's told me this a couple of times, but like, this is the part that really freaks me out. So yeah, the screens are like on the outside of the windows, like the exterior side of the window, and the windows are locked and closed, but the screens are gone. That when he like finally was kind of able to, you know, get up and move around, was like finally officially awake and was moving, he said that the lights were gone. So like, he didn't see the lights anymore. Mm-hmm. He also says that to his knowledge, he's never suffered from any like sleep paralysis, doesn't suffer from like sleep apnea, nor is he known to sleepwalk. And I've been with him for 11 years and living with him for like five years maybe now. Mm-hmm. And like I can say that I have never seen him sleepwalk, and he's never like complained of like any other sleep paralysis issues. He did say that there were like no little green men, no figures, like he didn't see anything moving around, but he just remembers being very uncomfortable, and he remembers that like paralyzing fear.
Yeah, what I mean, that's like classic sleep paralysis,
right.
Was it like I don't know if he told you this. Was this like a particularly stressful time in his life for any reason?
I did not ask. But I do think that I don't know that this necessarily matters, but he went through a period of time where he had a hard time sleeping. So like I kind of wonder if maybe that had maybe something to do with
it. Sure. Yeah, like his sleep was just fucked up or whatever.
Yeah. Huh. And like for the most part, I feel like sleep paralysis like, or, you know, sleepwalking, I could explain a lot of it away. But The part that gets me is the screens being off the windows. And so I'm just like convinced somebody was trying to break in. Because like, why else would they not be there?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the bed sheets across the room is sort of weird.
Yeah.
But doesn't bother me that much because like I used to toss and turn around so much. So like they could have gotten flung off from
I've woken up on the wrong side of the bed with like my pants on the other side of the room, like it, you know. Yeah, it could happen.
Yeah, I've gone to bed with a shirt on before and then I wake up and I'm like, where is my shirt? And I've like managed to put it completely off like while I'm sleeping. It's like that doesn't bother me. I guess my only thought with the screens is like maybe his mom had like taken them off the day before and just set them down there while she was like switching them out for storm windows for the winter or something, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean that's possible. I didn't even think about like maybe she had just taken them off for some reason. I immediately went to like somebody was just trying to break into your house.
Yeah, like I was just wondering if like this, you know, his mom had taken the screens off to clean the windows or like switched them to the storm windows for winter or something, and that it just happened to be like a detail that he remembers. But I wonder if he remembers like were the screens definitely on there the night before or something.
Right. Yeah. Good question. And I
His mom's like me and she thinks like, you know, at very odd times of the night, like I need to do this chore right now. And so she's like, I'm just going to go turn on the, you know, my car lights and like, I'm going to take the screens off the windows so I can clean them in the middle of the night. And then, and then Elliot has this experience.
Yeah. I mean, as far as like the lights go and all of that, like I can kind of, even that I can feel like I can kind of explain away with like sleep paralysis or having like some sort of nightmare or something where, you know, because he said like kind of once he was like able to move around and was up, like the lights were gone.
Yeah.
But yep, the screens on the windows just throws me. But you're right. Maybe they just hadn't been there and it wasn't until that night that he noticed it.
That's my debunking of Elliot's story. But it's like, it's good to have one from somebody who's close to you, you know?
Right.
Because that's like, I mean, that's like a classic. Like, if you told that to some UFO people, they'd be like, you're definitely abducted.
Right. Exactly.
And the only reason I asked about, like, was it a stressful time in his life was because, like, I think you can have, like, one-off sleep paralysis events if, like, you're going through something particularly stressful or traumatic or whatever.
Yeah, and that's kind of what he said is like, I you know, there's a part of me that wonders if I just had like some sort of sleep paralysis thing that happened one time and I've just never mm-hmm. dealt with it again. I'm like, that's kind of what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. Let's that's talk what about I'm... Elliot's childhood dramas. I'm sorry. That's it, right? That's all I
yeah, I think that's it.
Your brain is freaky and weird.
Yeah, brain is weird. And also, you probably haven't been abducted by aliens.
Yes. Although tonight, probably.
You're going to get abducted by aliens.
Yeah, I'm going to have like some sort of sleep paralysis event. I know. Like every time I talk about it, it's like I'm one step closer to
oh, yeah.
what happened to myself.
Yeah, I don't. I'm pretty much done talking about it. This is it for me.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, at this point I was thinking like we'd do a full episode on it, but it's like other than like people think they're getting abducted by aliens or people think they're getting haunted by demons, like that's sleep paralysis right there.
Right.
Like what else is there to talk about, you know?
All right. Well, that wraps up our episode on alien abductions. Tune in next time for another spooky episode. We don't have a topic picked yet, so if you have any ideas for it, reach out to us on social media and let us know. If you like this episode, hit subscribe and share with a friend. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Spooky SciPod, Facebook at Spooky Science Sisters, and at our website, SpookyScienceSisters.com. If you have any questions about previous topics or ideas for future episodes, email us at SpookyScienceSisters@gmail.com. As always, thank you for listening and stay spooky.
This podcast is a part of Straight Up Strange Productions. Discover more shows like this one at straightupstrange.com.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.